CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Ink Studs. You're listening to. Go ahead and push it, Luke. Thank you. My guest today is Mr. Johnny Ryan. Do I got you there, Johnny?
Yes, you do.
Normally, I had a very rushed time getting on the phone. My phone card wasn't working, so I would have had more time to explain how I intro my guest and yada, 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 but the song ended and I very quickly brought you on. So this is the radio show about comics at UBC. School's back in session. It's all crazy up here in the university. And my guest today, Johnny Ryan, is one of my favorite cartoonists.
Thank you.
I am a big fan of Angry Youth Comics and Blecky Yuccarella and Comic Book Holocaust and the Crazy Comics Club. Did I get it right? Classic Comics Club. It's the K. I always go with the somehow crazy should be spelt with a K to me. In a better world, maybe. So how are you doing today, Johnny?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah? So I guess we'll start out with kind of talk about your comics and kind of your influences. Talk about the latest issue, which has the fantastic cover. I guess the dolls. Are they actually dolls that people can buy?
Well, yes, they're on the way.
They're on the way.
That's the last I heard. They're not for sale as of yet, but hopefully sometime before Christmas, but, you know, who knows?
Fresh for everyone's stockings.
Yes.
The perfect thing to get every young boy and girl. Mm-hmm. Now, so Angry Youth Comics, when did you start working on that?
Well, when I initially, conceived it. When I first started doing it, I was just doing it for fun. I wasn't thinking of it as like a comic book to sell or anything. It was just a fun thing I was doing for friends of mine on notebook paper. It was probably around 1992 or so. I was working as a telemarketer, and in between phone calls, I would doodle out
the little
comic stories.
And I'm sure you get lots of fodder of swear words and plenty of expletives from phone calls doing telemarketing.
Well, it was sort of a weird. Well, I guess it's not weird at all. But when you're in the telemarketing situation, they're really militant about, because I guess, you know, people in between. It was an incoming call thing. It was an outgoing call thing. So in between calls, they didn't want you to just sort of like. They didn't want you to do any reading. Or, you know, look like you were relaxing or anything like that. If you were going to do anything, any reading, you had to read the Chadwicks of Boston catalog. That was the catalog company I was working for. And but there was no rules against drawing, so they didn't really know what to say about that. So they kind of just, I guess, they just didn't really say anything about it.
I worked in a call center at one point for a couple of months, and it was pretty similar. The land of no fun. And the intaking calls into the.
Yeah, you
someone
put your feet up. they would, like, you know, yell at you if you, like, you know, maybe put your feet up on the desk or something like that. It was very very controlled environment.
And the incentives when working there, they'd say, you know, try and do your best job so we can help out the you know, make money. And this is for like a huge multinational bank. And I'm thinking, like, what do I care? It's like they're like, we got to protect the stocks. I'm like, didn't you know? You help fund the Nazis in the 40s, in the 30s and stuff.
Well, that's sort of the basis of a lot of you know, large companies who have these small peon type workers. The trick is to rally these people in order, you know, to get them to give a shit.
Yeah.
And you know, some people do give a shit. Some people want to give a shit and be part of it, but you know, then
it's all about
people like me. Are just, you know, I'm just trying to make it through the day.
Yeah, not drinking the Jonestown Kool-Aid, so to say.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to do a listener discretion be advised, just in case we get into any descriptives about your strips, because I guess Angry Youth Comics are some of the more
descriptive comics.
I was trying to think of the right word, and I already said explain. So yeah, it's and we are in Canada, so we're a little more liberal than the laws you have in the States, where I think if you say boobies,
we,
you know,
just get adult matters frankly here.
Pretty much, yeah. We're a mature liberal society, or that's what we say. But who really knows? So he started in the call center there, and just that was just doing like basic doodles, like what you have in Shouldn't You Be Working?
Yeah, for the most part, some of that, but actually, just the strips. Some of the, I think in the collection Porta Johnny, in the very back of the book, there's a sample of a 2-page comic strip that I did while I was working there. I don't know if I was actually on the clock when I drew that particular strip, but it was around the time I was working there, and you know, it was just totally retarded. I wasn't doing any sort of like pencils or anything. It was just immediately putting down, you know, not planning anything out. I don't even think I was using like the boxes or you know the traditional comic box.
Yeah, no, I've actually got the book right in front of me, and it's just pretty.
So I was just like vomiting out the comic, and yeah. So it, you know, like I said, it wasn't intended. You know, I don't think I was at that point really intending to make a career out of it. It was just me fucking around.
The first things you did were the Angry Youth. I guess were there mini comics originally, because I haven't actually seen the originals.
I mean, I guess they could be considered mini comics in the way that just it was part of that mini comic world, but they weren't the mini comic size. I think they were even a little bit larger than traditional comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess that's something you like to do, is not stick to the typical dimensions, because the...
It wasn't like a thought-out decision. It was just the way it happened.
Was it just like the big cheap paper?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like I was thinking, you know, everybody's doing it this way, so I'm going to be contrary and do it this way. And, you know, there was none of that. I was doing it with a friend of mine, and we took it to the print shop, and it was, I guess, just the size that I drew it at. It just kind of all just fit together.
Now, was that while you're living in Massachusetts, or was that in Seattle?
That was in Massachusetts.
And then when did you move to Seattle? Like,
Well, let's see, I started, I think I put out the first, like, actual mini comic, Angry Youth Comics, in 1994, and I didn't move to Seattle till like late 99.
Oh, okay. And that's when you sent Pete Bag some of the
minis? Yeah, early 99, I sent him all the comics I had made up till that point.
And he was a quick fan.
Yes.
Now, the Porta Johnny, that's how good a complete collection is it? Or did you kind of expurge the stuff that was kind of...
Yeah, there was that. I think it's collects pretty much everything from in the mini comic run. It collects everything from number 7 to number 11, and then some other like various anthology things I had done up until that point.
What was the lighter side stuff out of? The Dave Berg. Takeoffs, the lighter side of...
Oh, that was... I think that appeared in the Comics Journal.
Okay.
I can't remember why they had me do that, but it was... They did some issue about Mad Magazine or Mad Comics or something, and I think that's what I did that for.
Now, you grew up a pretty big Mad fan, from what I understand, eh?
Sure.
Are you of the crowd that the Dave Berg stuff just bothered you, that it was included
in
with
the... I didn't like it as a kid. It looked pretty boring. It looked like boring adults having boring conversations, and even the words looked boring. I mean, actually, like they, you know, literally looked like, you know, it was that boring font in the boring word square word balloons. You know, so it didn't really appeal to me as a kid. I was more on the Don Martin, Al Jaffe side of the street,
mm-hmm.
where everything just sort of looked like nuts and wacky and crazy sound effects, cartoony. I think I sort of gained a little bit of appreciation when I drew that particular Dave Berg parody that you just mentioned. You
know, yeah.
Trying to draw like that is actually kind of difficult.
I guess he's got the, you know, it's different though when you're drawing in a different style and stuff and doing someone else's thing.
Mm-hmm.
He probably wouldn't be able to draw like you.
No, not anymore anyway.
So... When did you first really get into comics and humor comics and stuff like that?
Gosh, I mean, I couldn't give you an exact date, but, you know, as a kid, just Mad Magazine was you know, I think my, you know, Mad and I think Crazy and a little bit of Cracked, they were pretty much my sole humor comics, like in comic form or magazine form. And then I just, I guess the, you know, the newspaper strips, too. Those are all the funny comics, anyway.
Yeah.
It wasn't until later that, like, I guess early teens, I started checking out superhero stuff.
Now, one thing I find pretty fascinating is you were located in close proximity to Edward Gorey.
Right.
And kind of hunted him down. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, he lived on Cape Cod in Yarmouthport, to be exact, and I lived in Plymouth, which is or Manomet, to be exact, which is just on the other side of the Cape Cod Canal. And I was in my 20s. My friend and I were driving around on Cape Cod, and I had read somewhere previously that, you know, some article about Edward Gorey and these guys from New Jersey just drove up to his house and took him out and asked him if he, you know, they could take him out to lunch, and he went with them, and so we thought, hey, we should do that. We should just go, you know, knock on his door and see if he wants to go to lunch with us. And so that's basically what we did.
Was that the only experience, or did you kind of correspond with him further after that?
Well, after that, I think we went to lunch with him that day, and then I think that day we asked him, because when I was doing those early, like maybe the first six issues of Angry Youth Comics, I was doing it with this friend of mine, Matt Sanborn, and Matt Sanborn would do sort of more of a zine type of side of the book. He would do reviews and articles, and he would interview porn stars and things, and then I would do the comics, and so we asked him if he would be up for doing some interview for this comic that we were doing, and he agreed. So I think the second time we went to see him, we were in fact interviewing him for the book. And then subsequent to that, I think, you know, every once in a while, if we were driving around on Cape Cod, we would, and we had nothing to do, we would just say, hey, let's go see what Mr. Gorey's doing. And sometimes he would be home, and sometimes he wouldn't.
And he appreciated the visits? Didn't freak him out or anything?
Well, I mean, every time every time he was there, and, you know, or at least he pretended like he, you know, he let us in his house, and, you know, we would sit in his kitchen, and, you know, he would talk for, seemed like a couple hours. I mean, we probably had, like, maybe four or five visits like that over the course of, like, a couple years.
Any chance of reprinting that interview?
Well, that's the thing. That interview appeared in Angry Youth Comics number 8, and I only, when I was doing those early runs of Angry Youth Comics, I probably would make just like a couple, like 100 or 200 at a time, and to tell you the truth, I have no idea how many of the number 8 issue were made. So all I know is I had one copy of it, and I loaned it to somebody, and then they lost it. So I have no idea where it is at all.
So it's one of those lost.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone's listening and has a copy, you can email Johnny through johnnyr.com.
Right.
Now, you're probably one of the only cartoonists that could say that he's published by both Hustler and Nickelodeon Kids.
Hmm.
How does that feel, that kind of that distinction?
I don't know about that. I think there might be some other guys. I'm trying to think of some names. I think there's a cartoonist. I think his name might be Ian Baker or something. I think he's done stuff for adults. In particular, maybe Hustler. I don't know. I think you'd be surprised that, you know, the...
Well, I know Bob wouldn't be surprised if Bob Fingerman... Well, he doesn't have any kids stuff, does he?
I'm not sure about Bob Fingerman.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you'd be surprised, you know, if you look back on the history of the comic artists and saw, you know, who was doing stuff for kids and adults simultaneously.
Well, I think that's a project that Craig Yao for ARF was working on, some right. kind of anthology of classic comic strip guys doing mm-hmm. Some kind of, you know, Tijuana Bible-esque stuff at some point in
right.
time.
Well, Chris Duffy over at Nickelodeon Magazine, he is the art director over there, and he's just really smart about comics, and he's just aware of the fact that people that, you know, do stuff for adults can also do stuff for kids, and, you know, and separate the two.
It's kind of frustrating for me because it looks great, but I'm in Canada,
mm-hmm.
so I don't get it.
Oh, which one don't you get?
The Nickelodeon.
Oh, Nickelodeon. You do get Hustler, though.
I haven't been hunting it down recently. I think porn sales have, you know, died down in the internet years. I know Screw Magazine just isn't making the money they used to.
Right.
One of the things you do in that is a thing with Dave Cooper.
Right.
And I don't know much about it. Like, I've seen little, like, things written about it, but, you know, Dave's one of my favorite, you know, I've bought one of his prints and stuff, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, love his stuff. What is the thing that you guys collaborated on?
We collaborated on, for Nickelodeon Magazine, we collaborated on three different stories. One was a SpongeBob SquarePants story that I wrote and he drew. I think Nickelodeon Magazine has little projects like that where they take that licensed material like SpongeBob or whatever, you know, the cartoon of the day is on the TV channel, and they'll do like a little comic story, like Fairly Odd Parents or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did two original stories where Dave would just give me three characters. And I'm trying to think of three of the characters. Like, one would be Pigeon, Apples, and Alien. And so then I would just have to write a two-page story around these three character types. And so, yeah, we did two of those types of things. But I think Dave is kind of moving away from comics at a rapid speed.
Yeah, so. that's what I thought, because he's working on a big painting project right now for galleries.
I think he was doing painting, you know, a few years ago too,
mm-hmm.
but I think he just sort of was gradually moving away from comics. I think he's almost completely away from comics now.
Yeah, from what I understand, the last Weasel story arc was kind of what he wanted to finish with.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know if there'll be any more collaborations in the future simply because of that.
Well, it's too bad, but
it is. I mean, he was really good to collaborate with, because I sort of felt like I could come up with, you know, I'd write a whole story out, you know, just like a regular script, and even rereading the script that I would do, I really would have trouble thinking of, like, how's he going to fit all this stuff in there and make it look good? And but he's really good at pulling that off.
Now, is that something you've done for many other artists, is just strictly write stuff? Because I know you've written other stuff for him, like for the DC Bizarro
DC
books.
Yeah, DC had that Bizarro book that I wrote a script for him. I don't think I've ever collaborated. There's been people who have written stuff for me that mm-hmm. I drew.
Well, you did the Hippler story with Pete.
With the Hippler thing, it was kind of it was more of a back and forth collaboration where, you know, it wasn't like Pete did a script and then I drew it. Pete meaning Peter Bagg.
Mm, yeah.
It was sort of, we were just bouncing ideas off of each other and then I just drew it. And then I know with there was a Dildobert story mm-hmm. that I did with Peter that he completely scripted, and then I just drew it.
What was that originally published? I'm trying to remember.
That was in a Hate annual.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember which one.
But then it's republished in one of the collections, I think?
None of mine. I don't know if it's published. Before that one, there might be some confusion, because I did...
That's right, I'm thinking of...
I did a Dildobert that was... just a three-page, you know, just three-page thing. And then when Pete did this one, it was a longer piece. I think it was like maybe 8 or 10 pages, and it had more to do with like Al Qaeda and things like that. And so that was like two separate things.
One to check out. I think I'm going to play a quick song break. I've got the Devo album that has the Uncontrollable Urge, I should mention. That was the song we played. Any other song in that album you'd like to hear?
I don't know.
You can play, pick any track off that album.
Well, what else is on there? I don't know.
Satisfaction, Praying
okay,
Hands.
Okay, play that one.
I was going to say there's Mongoloid.
That's good, too.
I asked the music director. He said it's fine to play it, so that was Mongoloid.
Okay.
We'll be right back in a sec with Johnny Ryan, and this is CITR 101.9 FM. CITR 101.9 FM. This is Ink Studs, the radio show where we talk about comics and talk to comics folk. This week's guest is Johnny Ryan, the author of Angry Youth Comics and Becky Yuccarella and Classics Comics Club and the Comic Book Holocaust and Yards and Yards of Filthy Goodness.
It sounded like you said IKEA yuccarella.
Oh, you kind of put it together and not have all the parts and stuff, or
right? Do it yourself.
There we go. Do it yourself, yuccarella. Yuccarella, one of your later creations, I understand.
Yeah, fairly, I guess.
Came along and while you're doing the current Fantagraphics run,
right?
Now that was for a while appearing in the, and I guess in the Portland Mercury,
right?
And then they dropped it.
Yes,
I understand there was some outrage online of people not happy with that.
Yeah, I guess there was a couple, but not enough to make a difference.
Well, we have had similar in Vancouver with some of our great local strips being dumped for some guy named Groaning.
Yeah, well, if that had been the case, I guess it wouldn't have been as insulting.
It was just nothing?
It was a pretty... I can't even remember the name of it, but it was just like two kind of clip art Tyrannosaurus Rexes.
Oh, I know the one.
And
it's horrible.
And they were...
It's the same thing every time.
It's unreadable.
It
takes up a lot of room on that page. And I think they had to cut two strips to get that gem in there.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the Portland Mercury in months, so I don't know if they still have it, but yeah.
That's online. That is a really popular strip, and I don't get it.
I don't know. People seem to really love the clip art comic.
It's something that bugs me about online comics, because it's like they just kind of take it to its lowest level of, I don't know, I guess it's either that kind of boring or it's like emo or, I don't know. People need to be funny again. Why aren't enough people funny?
Well, that's like, it's one of those strips that I probably never would have ever heard of or seen unless it took my spot, so.
Yeah. No, I'd gotten flack from people for not doing any radio shows with webcomic people, and my friend sent me a link to it, and I looked at it and like, why would I want to talk to this guy?
Well, now Blecky is pretty much only on the web, so now you're talking to a webcomic guy. So
yeah, but...
That fills that void.
There we go. Something online. Well, there's some stuff I enjoy online, but then there's stuff like that. And just, it's like, I don't know, there's potential there that's just not being tapped. I guess that's the same in any corner of the comics universe.
Mm-hmm.
There's always lots of crud to sort through. Speaking of crud, XXX Scumbag Party is your latest collection,
right?
From Fantagraphics. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I quite like about it is that you've managed to shove in the your Vice strips.
Right. Well, some of that stuff... I don't know. I don't feel like I get a lot of feedback from that stuff that I put in Vice, and you know, I should feel like I should, you know, get it into the hands of more people. But actually, now that I think about it, more people probably pick up Vice than my book. But I don't know.
Whatever. I'm happy.
It's good to get it out there, and no matter what.
Well, I'm happy it's included because Vice has always had a lot of great strips in there. Like Ivan Brunetti used to do the things that. Was it one, like 1,800 and some odd things that make me want to puke and stuff like that that's never been reprinted?
Uh-huh.
No, it's good. But staying on the track of Vice is you edited the comics issue.
Right.
What kind of brought that about, and what was that like?
It was just the suggestion I had made to Gavin, who was one of the guys over at Vice.
Mm-hmm.
And... At first, I don't think he was too into it, but then, you know, a couple months passed, and he asked if I was still into doing something like that. And so I thought it might be a fun project to do. And, yeah, so that's kind of how it just sort of started like that, and I just started asking people that I thought might be able to do some fun and interesting things.
Well, it's pretty neat, because you get, like, the creme de la creme of the comics field in there. I mean, there's a Gary Panter page...
Right.
And stuff like, were you kind of given, like, just basically total caveat, tabula rasa to go and, like, just pick whoever you want?
Yes and no. There were some people that I had asked that Vice weren't really into, and then, you know, vice versa. There were some people, there's actually there were some people that Vice wanted in there and actually got in there, and I didn't really have any say over that. So there was kind of a lot of headbutting on that account. There was people that I would ask to do things for it, and then they were summarily just cut out without Vice even informing me that they were cut out.
So you're more of a curator than a than an editor.
In the end, it sort of turned out that way.
Do you mind saying who some of the people were that you would have liked to have had?
Well, I mean, I don't want to. I just don't want to put them in sort of a bad position of the, like them having to know that Vice didn't like their stuff, and I had to yell at Vice all night and day just to try to get it back in there or something. So,
and there's still a contract, there's still a job, right?
Right.
It was the neat thing was getting the Al Jaffe cover.
Well, that was Gavin who I guess Al Jaffe had done some illustrations for Vice previous to this issue, and so Gavin knew him in some way, and he asked him to do the cover, and he did it, and he just did like the head exploding, and then I just drew the little characters flying around inside his head explosion.
It's neat, you know, being like a kid, like you growing up on the Mad Magazine stuff, and like. You know, Al being one of the bastions of the goodness, like him and Sergio and Don Martin. Unfortunately, we'll never see any new Don Martin stuff. But
right.
They are releasing a collection of his stuff, though.
I saw recently that, I think on Amazon, that there's like this 2-volume hardcover set of Don Martin coming out.
It's like the complete Don Martin, like, you know, the more, what was the name of the guy, the character he had in there? I can't remember. Right now, but you know, lots of floppy feet and big
right.
chins. So I'm excited. I know a lot of people are excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the neat thing about the or one of the funny things I observed reading it, and my girlfriend, who's not into the poopy humor as much as I am, was noticing a lot of the poo jokes and such as the humor thing was such as kind of like everyone going along the vein of like a lot of the stuff that you do, just kind of. Following suit.
Right.
I guess I was wondering, like, that was, like, intentional to kind of, you know, a certain style or not.
You mean, like, Al Jaffe and...
No, like the Jordan Crane strip and, like, the,
Well, I was just asking people to do something funny. You know, I just wanted to see what people could come up with if they were doing, if they had to do a funny comic strip.
Yeah.
And that was the only I guess editorial requirement for me, and so I guess that was just all what you know that was all their attempts at being funny.
It's all kind of synchronicity. All
right.
Now your art style it's like slowly developed into like the I guess the fine toned. Version you have now, like the really the lush inking and stuff. How, like, what is your process for doing a piece? And has it changed over time?
Oh yeah. Now I just I pencil out a page and then I ink the page with a brush. I used to, I really had no idea what I was doing, and I knew I wanted some kind of thick line when I started, so I would just I would just have like a pen that I ballpoint pen that I bought at a drugstore, and I would just kind of like go over the line like really kind of hard and scratchy,
and just back and forth.
Yeah, just to make it look like it was a thick line, and not really knowing that there's a better way to get that sort of effect. And then I started to get kind of anal about it, and where I would, I think actually when I started to use a brush, I used to do a thing where I would use the brush, and then I would kind of go over it with a pen to make it smoother. And then I think it was issue 4 that I just said, fuck it, and this is like so time-consuming and tedious. I have to speed the pace up here, and so I just said I was just going to start using only the brush and not really relying on the pen as some kind of crutch. And, I guess I just sort of trained myself to... solely rely on the brush.
What kind of brush and ink do you use? Just for the artists listening.
Speedball ink. here. Brush I was using today is a round Princeton Art number 2.
So there we go, for people interested in trying to get that same fine line.
Yeah.
It's actually quite interesting. A lot of people get something out of, like, hearing, like, what kind of pen people use. I don't remember most of the time, because my writing is this atrocious thing that looks like a 5-year-old scrawled on something.
Well, the thing is like, you know, I still feel like I'm always trying to, you know, master this process, so it's something that you got to do every day for several years before, you know, you even start to get something that looks okay.
Does it help talking to other cartoonists and finding out, like, what kind of techniques and what kind of tools they use and stuff? Or
I think when I moved to Seattle and I started meeting other people that were doing the same things that I was doing, hearing what they do and hearing how they make their art, it definitely would help.
Any time-saving techniques or headache-saving techniques that you found were helpful?
Well, just the use of the brush, you know, like I mentioned before, I was an idiot. I didn't know, you know, you're supposed to use a brush when you cartoon. That didn't really make sense to me, that people did. So that was sort of a big thing for me to learn that piece of information.
I know Brunetti still uses a pen.
Oh, yeah.
Which I find really interesting, because he's got really nice, thick lines, too, and
it looks like a brush.
Yeah, it totally does. He says a lot of people think that, but...
Oh, you fooled them.
Yeah. Now, in the back of the latest issue of Angry Youth Comics, number 13, you've got the New Yorker visiting an office of... or studio of cartoonists, all very obvious who they are. Adrian Tominay, Brunetti, Chris Ware, and Seth, and Crom and Spiegelman. Who's the other guy?
That's who you say they are.
Fine.
They're just, you know, general cartoonists. I didn't have anybody in mind.
Okay. Just, stereotypes.
Just general, cartoonist stereotypes. You see them everywhere.
Okay, I'm going to continue scratching my head to figure out who the last one is, and that's fine. So how about the your more small press stuff that you've got going, the Comics Club and the Comic Book Holocaust, which had the Marvel Funny Pages?
Right.
And the two Comic Book Holocaust before. Now, those ones, that's a little more your rougher work, right?
Well, that just started out as I did those two Shouldn't You Be Working books for Fantagraphics,
mm-hmm.
which was just, you know, sketchbook stuff that I did while I was working at the Seattle Urological Clinic. I would just draw stuff while I was should have been working, of course. And it then just kind of morphed into doing these strips where I didn't want to really... I wanted to do something where I wasn't concerning myself with how it looked, does it make any sense, just, you know, whatever pops in, you know, start at the beginning and whatever pops into my head, I'm just going to vomit it out as quickly as possible. No matter how awful or weird or whatever, you know, just a general purge. And so it just kind of started like that. And it started off with, I thought, well, you know, maybe I could, you know, if I do these every week, maybe I can then, after I do 24, I can collect them into a little mini comic. And that's when I kind of hooked up with Alvin Buenaventura. He had a letterpress thing going where he would make letterpress prints, and he offered to do the covers for these little mini comics that I was making. So I did 4 of these books with him doing the letterpress covers, and right as I, you know, got to, I think, around number 4, he was starting up his Buenaventura Press publishing.
Mm-hmm.
He started to publish books. So I thought, well, you know, maybe, you know, we can make a book out of this and he could publish it. And so we decided to do that.
And he's swiftly turned into one of my favorite publishers right now, doing some
he does some good stuff.
Really interesting stuff. Now, you've got, I understand your BA in English Lit?
Right.
So in the Classic Comics Club, mm-hmm. it's mostly parodies of fine literature.
I wanted to do like a book of I guess, you know, like a classic illustrated type of a thing. So,
Are you very well read in a lot of the stuff you did, or is it basically like you kind of, you know?
So far, I think like maybe 95% to 99%. I try to do things that I've read, but then sometimes I'll have an idea that sort of fits well with, like, I did a parody of The Shining using the characters from Baby Blues, that comic strip, and it kind of fit, but I've never read The Shining, but I figured I knew enough about it.
You've seen the movie.
To do something with it. So that there are, like, a couple instances, but so far I do try to work with stuff that I've read to some degree.
One of my favorite was the Naked Lunch version that you did.
Oh, thanks.
Because, I don't know, there's just so much you could do with that movie, or that book.
Well, that one was actually kind of difficult because it's kind of a disgusting, raunchy book anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, how can you, you know, how do you turn something that is gross and
you could do like
grosser?
Or you could do like a Coachella version.
Yeah.
And make it
very gentle and cute. Yeah, so.
How do you take it to the next level is the question.
Right. So that one was, I guess, a little bit on the challenging side.
Has there ever been a point where you've done a parody or something or a strip and you've just been like, why did I do that? It was just like so horrible and just like...
You mean horrible in what way? Like horrible, like this came out shitty and it's not funny? Or horrible and, you know, this was so mean? And
in the mean context, yeah. I don't like say mean because I don't think stuff's mean. I think it's fun and playful.
Uh-huh.
Is more the aspect I get.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's just kind of like something just like way over the top that you just like, everyone's going to look at this and think I'm fucked.
No, I try my best not to think like that. I mean, I think that's sort of the point of doing these. I mean, that was sort of the point of doing these strips, is to sort of free myself from that. And it's weird that in some comics, a lot of autobio comics, people are sort of praised for their honesty,
mm-hmm.
and you know bearing it all, and yet, you know, if you bear these ideas that, you know, you might think are funny or weird or interesting, and yet, you know, to other people they're offensive and ugly, you know, then they don't like it. But in this other, you know, in the autobio world, you know, it's okay to do that stuff because you're being brave and honest. But I know I just sort of feel like I'm revealing this inner part of myself, these ideas that I find interesting and compelling and shocking and challenging.
Like a kind of a social commentary in some aspects.
I don't think about it like as social commentary. I just
I don't mean like pretentious social commentary, but I mean like just kind of like being like brutally honest of like what things are really like.
It's fun when I'm drawing and I'm sketching in my sketchbook. It's really fun when I come up with an idea that is just really, I don't know, something's like really brutal. Like if I could really think of something that's really brutal and honest and hardcore and exciting, then I get excited about it and I'm like, wow, this is great. This is a lot of fun. But then there's those other times where I just sort of feel like I'm not getting those ideas and I'm just kind of going through the motions. When I come up with those dangerous ideas, that's when the drawing becomes fun to me.
Mm-hmm. And is that where you're trying to kind of collect them together for the Angry Youth stuff to kind of have that, like, that stuff that you really feel shines?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, some of it shines and some of it doesn't, but that's all part of being an artist, you know? You just have to keep working and working, and you know, sometimes those moments are going to happen and sometimes they're not, and you just got to sort of be there for when they do.
I guess it must be a challenge because you, you know, you're going at it full time,
mm-hmm.
And, like, constantly having to be funny with stuff, and then at the same time you're also doing, like, the National Geographic stuff.
Right.
And the Nickelodeon Kids stuff. So is it kind of like you feel like you have all the stuff in you, but then you've got, like, to kind of subdue it?
Well, it's interesting. The stuff that I do for kids, you know, in a way I sort of feel that it has kind of the same tone as the stuff stuff that I do for adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the stuff that I do for adults, it has, I mean, even though it contains a lot of, you know, adult images and pornographic and profanity or whatever, I think the tone of it has that sort of surreal nonsense tone that my kids' stuff has. But I'm not using the, but instead of the pornographic stuff, and I'm just using, you know, more kid-friendly stuff like Christmas and boogers and things.
I
think it's still sort of the same kind of sensibilities.
Yeah, kind of going for the same humor. And that is just, I just find it must be difficult, just like, I don't know, as another writer myself, the constant just challenge of the continual slug of work. Maybe it's sounding like a negative Nilly right now.
Well, it's, you know, it's when I think of that, I have to remember that it's better than working at a urological clinic or in a telemarketing warehouse or, you know, substitute teaching or many of the other shitty jobs I've had.
The urological clinic is one of the more odd, interesting sounding things. Is it more less interesting than it sounds?
I didn't get to touch the pee or anything. It was primarily insurance billing that I was doing. So I was sort of in a little separate office. I wasn't in the I wasn't high profile in the, you know, on the edge of the urological world there.
The fine hands of pee handling.
Right.
Well, at least there you probably get to see some people's odd insurance forms or whatnot.
Well, what was good about it was that I had an office off to the side and nobody really bothered me, so I was able to kind of fuck around.
And that was your last real job?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, I guess, an unrewarding job,
yeah,
one might say. And,
but it was one of the few jobs where they seemed to like me for some reason, but I really didn't do much work, so it was kind of a good combination.
Now, you relocated to L.A.,
right?
Am I right? Mm-hmm. And have your cats Kang and Kodos?
Right.
After the aliens in the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror special?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a kind of different community down there for the comics world and the Seattle scene?
It seems to me like there just was a lot. There was a bigger comics community down here than in Seattle. So yeah, there definitely was that I think kind of made it more fun for me.
Now, we're coming near the end of our time. So, what can we look forward to for more Johnny Ryan products that people can check out? I mean, there's the dolls coming out. There's the comics.
There's going to be another classic comics mini comic that will be available on my website, johnnyr.com, probably by the end of this month or maybe early next month. I'm actually going to St. Louis tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Book signing, so all you people in Vancouver who live in St. Louis, over there.
It's most of my listeners are actually probably outside of Vancouver.
Oh,
for podcasting and stuff, when I post it up later for the listeners at inkstuds.com.
Right.
And stuff. And Fantagraphics always posts it on their site. When
yeah,
it's,
so that's this weekend. Let me see what other books I got coming out. I think that's kind of all the books I have.
You've got condoms too, right?
What's that?
There's Angry with Condoms, I understand.
Oh, yeah. Those are also available from condomania.com. Those will get you in the mood.
There we go. Hey, honey, I've got a pocket full of STDs here for you. Well, thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Sure.
I gotta say, like, you're one of the few cartoonists I've actually sought out and bought pieces by. So,
that's, thanks.
You're good in my books.
Good to know.
And looking forward to. I guess it'll be a while till the next issue of Angry Youth, because that one just came out.
Right.
For the
Cullen.
Probably
early next year, maybe, or something.
Okay. Well, looking forward to it, and for people to check out your website and stuff.
Great.
Okay, thanks, Johnny.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Johnny Ryan, author of Angry Youth Comics, and he's got collections of What Are You Looking At?, Triple X Scumbag Party, and Porta Johnny, and the Becky Yuccarella Blecky Yuckerel, I should say, collections, all from Fantagraphics. And the only stuff he has that's not from Fantagraphics, because, you know, there's other publishers out there. Really, there are. From Bonaventura Press, you can only get these online, the Classic Comics Club. Limited 200 editions. And the Comic Book Holocaust reprints his older stuff along the same veins as the Classic Comics Club. A lot of parodies of comics, of other comics and stuff. That's actually probably my favorite stuff. It's Comic Book Holocaust. It's one of those things where any time you can pick it up, open it to any page, it's like, oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. But it's great. Next week, my guest will be Chris Staros. Or not next week. They're not until the 27th. Next week, it's me, Don, and Colin talking about comics that we have liked recently. To be an interesting Yak Fest. We haven't done one in a while. I apologize, people that just listen to us for interviews. But, you know, there's a lot of great great books to promote, and we're going to talk about our favorite that came out in the last 6 months. I think it's been about that long since our last review show. So that's the 13th. The 20th is David Heatley, who is one of the most open, self-confessing autobiographical cartoonists, as well as one of the most interesting right now. And I highly recommend checking out his stuff. His comics called Deadpan. They're not that easy to find, but he does have stuff in every MOME anthology, I think, almost everyone. And he's also in the last couple of Kramer's Ergots, maybe in the last three. I think he's in all the three big ones. If you haven't read Kramer's Ergot, it's a fantastic anthology of goodness. So that's the 20th, 27th. That's Chris Staros and Brett Warnock, the publishers of Top Shelf Books. They'll be joining us the weekend before Stumptown in Portland. Hopefully I'll be going down to that. Folks in Portland, come say hi to me from there and show me your comics. I like comics. I like print comics. Not big on the online stuff. But you should check out Johnny's website, johnnyr.com, because you can see, 15 or 20 of his parody stuff, and it's all awesome. Super, super awesome. This Sunday at Heritage Hall, Vancouver Comic Con, come down, check it out, and there'll be some good cheap stuff to get. I don't know what's happened in other cities, but Vancouver's my priority because I love it here. And I think that's about it. My throat is dry. I need to drink some water. So here's another Devo track. I'm going to play Jocko Homo. I hope you all do good. The Ink Studs, CITR 101.9 FM.